Connor Boyack, are you on the line?
I am, Jake. How's it going?
Oh, it's going okay. Unfortunately, I'm a talk radio host, and I'm losing my voice, it sounds like. So,
I'm talkative. I'll take over.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. So what's the topic today? What'd you want to get to?
So the topic today is a little bit more fundamental than talking about any specific event or particular, but I think it's fundamental because it recurs in so many conversations I have. The title that I chose is The False Foundation of the State. And you talk about whatever issue you want, whether it's the abstinence bill that just happened or public education generally or the gambling bill that the state legislature passed or foreign policy, whatever issue you're talking about. I think it can all be boiled down to some of these common arguments that we hear, and there are three that I want to talk about today. So the first one that we often hear is that we're a republic, right? Some people might say we're a representative democracy or we're a representative republic, but the word, at least those who are correctly referring to it, it includes the word representative. And I have a fundamental problem with that because I don't think representation, political representation, really works at all in the current system. It's just kind of it's a myth. And to give that example, I always talk about Provo, right here in Utah, that it's just this uber-conservative conclave, you know, a Republican stronghold. And do you think that a Democrat, just for example, in Provo feels represented in city council or the state legislature or whatever level of government?
Connor, don't get me started on that, because when I ran against Jason Chaffetz, the Democrat I ran against, which I polled better than in the Provo Herald, they ran a poll who they wanted. I came in second after Chaffetz, and yet they invited her to the debates. And her, she'd been a Democrat for 6 months after jumping ship for the Republicans.
I remember that.
So their choice is like, okay, you can have this Republican who's pretending to be a Republican, or you can have this Republican who's a Democrat. I mean, it's like, it's mind-boggling to me.
Well, and even when you get rid of the party, you know, for example, let's get rid of the different parties. I talk about that, at least currently, right, I'm in the Republican Party, so I share that affiliation with so many of these other people. So I have a Republican legislator. Does that legislator represent me? So ignore the fact that parties even exist at all.
Right.
Is that person representing me? Can that individual actually represent such a diverse body, a diverse constituency that believes so many different things on so many different issues? I contend that you know, we can call it whatever we want. I'm not saying that let's totally change the form of government overnight because this is a fraud and whatever. But I think it's incorrect to call it representation, representative republic, representative democracy. It just isn't representation. I disagree with my state legislator or my U.S. congressman on so many issues. I'm not being represented on those issues. And even if that legislator were to change to my point of view, then he or she would not be representing those who disagree with me. So this is one of the false foundations, I think, of the state. Is that people claim, oh, but it's a representative democracy. Your voice can be heard, right? You know, this legislator that was elected, he represents you because you're his constituent. And I think that's fundamentally false. I think it's kind of this self-deceptive lie that we've embraced to make ourselves feel good about the current arrangement of the current state of affairs. And I think it's fundamentally false. It just simply does not work. I think we just need to call it, you know, that individual happened to win a political popularity contest.
Like homecoming queen or something.
Right. So they get the power for the next couple of years or however many years until we have another popularity contest. And, I mean, it's like the free school lunches and vending machines for everyone if you elect me as the student council president. Like, it's, you know, it's just a contest. That's all. It's not representation. We tell ourselves that. We like to think that. It's really not the way it works. It can't. It fundamentally cannot work to have representation. So that's the first one. The second one, I think, is probably far more common, but it's to claim that we have the consent of the governed, right? I mean, Lincoln talked about this a lot. It's a long-standing argument that America is built on the consent of the governed.
Yeah, even Barbie says so in Toy Story 3.
Oh, good to know.
I just know that because I went to that Toy Story on Ice that came. So,
but it's an argument that you hear. I mean, even to the point that you're seeing it in kids' movies, I guess. But it's a very common argument. People claim that that's the foundation of our government, and that's why I'm including here in the false foundations of the state. Because when was that consent given? Right? What are we consenting to?
Well, you're speaking to the real core heart of the matter, something that nobody really wants to address, but I think was really put best maybe by Lysander Spooner, and you're hitting at the social contract.
And that's actually the third thing I was going to mention, which is related to the second. That's exactly right. It's that there exists as kind of a tangential or related issue from the consent of the governed as to what we're giving our consent to, as you mentioned, but you've given your consent to this social contract. The very, you know, existence of the state, it's kind of this self-perpetuating idea that because the state exists and needs to exist to protect you, this is going back to Thomas Hobbes, simply because the state can protect you, it therefore is able to perpetuate and enforce the social contract and enforce the common ideals that we all have. The problem we face here with all of these is collectivism. It's really what it all boils down to. It's not only not a recognition of the individual, it's an opposition to the individual. It's a homogenization of every individual into this collective that's administered or governed by the state that claims the authority, and that we kind of implicitly consent to that because what else are we going to do? We're going to fight against the state. But these are the false foundations. Note there is no social contract. You know, imagine getting married, you know, without any understanding or terms or common agreement between you and your wife. Imagine starting a business, you know, with a business partner where you haven't agreed to any terms of contract. Imagine hiring someone to build a home where you don't have a specific agreement on the services provided and the amount that you'll be paying. We would find that ridiculous.
Hold on just a second. Let's come back to that. So we're getting into some heady stuff. This is kind of a meaty show today. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review. Come on back. We'll talk about social contracts. What is the real foundations of the state? I hope Connor goes there next. K-Talk. All right, guys, Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am your host, Jake Shannon. We are in the middle of the Boyack Review. We've got Connor Boyack talking about the false foundations of the state. So, Connor, if it's okay, I've actually got a caller. Maybe you want to get him in. He actually wants to talk about Ron Paul and caucuses and stuff, and I think this might be your territory.
Sure.
Or we could wait. It's up to you.
No, let's go for it.
Okay, so we got Randy out in Salt Lake City. Randy, you're on the air.
Yeah, I might be a little bit out of sync here. I was listening to you earlier on the radio, and I couldn't get in to call.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
But you were talking about how somebody like Ron Paul can't get the recognition from the media and so forth, the support that he needs. And are you aware of what happened up in Washington? Have you read about that?
You know, Connor might know more. I think you probably follow Ron Paul closer than I do. I know that there's been a bunch of vote fraud allegations. There's been a lot of
Well, they took over a caucus up there. The from what I read, that there was the establishment Republican Party there saw that there was a lot of Ron Paul people, so they were supposed to elect a new chair and everything during that caucus, but the establishment folks took the vote counters and the ballot, so the Ron Paul people, just after they left, they just continued on with the meeting, saying that they were officially quorum there and that they elected one of theirs to be the new chair, and they took the vote, and it was
And the same thing also seemed to happen in there's something fishy happened in Missouri too, where I think he won that state. I don't know. Connor, do you know more about that?
Well, he swept a couple counties in Washington. I think what Randy might be referring to is actually what you mentioned, and is in Missouri, that that they tried to hold a meeting. They were supposed to elect a caucus chair, but the existing chair basically wouldn't allow it, shut down the meeting. The guy who was trying to run for chair, the Ron Paul guy, they started the meeting back up outside, and he and one other individual were then arrested for trespassing. And so the whole thing was shut down, and now the state party is saying, well, we want to make sure that the county isn't disenfranchised, and so they have to hold a caucus here within the next few weeks before the next phase in the delegate process in Missouri continues.
Well, you see all these shenanigans, you know that if Ron Paul had a fair shake, I think he would be one of the front runners for sure. And
yeah, I mean, you don't see anybody standing out in the cold doing a honk and wave for Romney or Santorum. I mean, it's just a fact.
You don't, but by the same token, just going to these caucuses that we had here in Utah shows me how many lame, what I'll call lame people that go to these, because they don't have a clue, man. Most of them just get told to go by somebody that they consider an authority figure, and they go, and they're just toeing the line, basically. And they don't even know what the background of the person they're supporting is, what they voted for. It's a pretty ignorant situation as far as I can see.
You know, Jake, I think Randy's comment can actually be tied back into what we were talking about earlier with the state. It's really interesting.
Okay, now hold on. So, Randy, I'm going to cut you loose. Can you just sit back and listen?
Yeah, I just think that there should be Ron Paul should just start up his own group to run independently this goal.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I mean, I think he is probably, you know, he is 77 or 76. He's probably burned out. He's ready to retire. I it's hard to say, but I appreciate the call, Randy. Connor, how does that tie in? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, that's fine. I was just thinking as he was talking that this happens a lot with the entitlement society that we're in, the welfare state, where you kind of get this treasure pooled together, these resources, and then that basically entices corruption. What I mean by that is when you have all these supposed freebies that the state can offer, these government goodies, whether in the form of, you know, benefits or tax exemptions or whatever, it becomes the political contest to determine who can get access to that and to what extent, right? The big battle is over, no, we shouldn't give welfare, you know, benefits to illegals. It's only for us, and we've created like this pot of gold that we feel that only we can access, and each party tries to control limited access or even more access for their constituents. It's just ridiculous. But this is kind of what happens when you have the state, as Randy mentioned, these shenanigans with existing party leaders, the establishment, who are trying to thwart off any competition to their power, whether it's legit, like an actual candidate, and trying to stifle someone who poses a threat, or whether it's just, you know, something more local and benign. I think what you find is that once we place so much political power in an entity as the state, has happened with the state, each contest, I mean, whether even you're just talking about something like at the city level, like the mayor election, or the state, or clearly with the presidential election, the big battle is who wins and who gets to impose their views and their ideals on the rest of us. It's the biggest folly with this supposed social contract that we were talking about, because there are no terms of this contract. No one agreed to anything specifically. That supposed contract gets to be defined, interpreted, and enforced by whoever wins a simple political popularity contest. Whoever can fool the most people into voting for them or promising them the most things or lulling them over or making them so apathetic that they just go and vote, you know, party line or what have you. So many different methods. It simply becomes their opportunity then to enforce and impose their will on the rest of us. That is, I think, the biggest danger of the state, where it pits the state against the individual, the collective against the individual, and because they get placed in a position of power, they are then able to override the individual and continue to, in their own flavor and fashion, impose upon and violate our rights. I think that is the biggest danger of the state. I think the founders were so wise, in to the extent that they were able to in their day, diffusing that power down to a state and a local level, but it's now over the past two centuries centralized back up to the federal level, and it's just the game, it's the contest each time. Which version of tyranny do you want? And I think that's why we see someone like a Ron Paul, who would be a serious threat to the establishment, who does want to diffuse and decentralize that power back down to the local level. You find those people who resist that, those statists who want to keep, retain their power to be able to do whatever they please.
Yeah, you know, I would suggest anybody who's interested in this line of reasoning, go look up a guy. His name's Lysander Spooner. And you tell me, does that sounds like a Mormon name from like the old days or something, doesn't it? I mean, it really
sounds
does.
Sounds like a polygamist.
Yeah. but check him out, because he makes this great argument about social contract. I don't remember signing any contract. And
right.
It's true. And this is a problem, especially when you look at this idea, you know, we're talking about morality and the economy. Well, one of the central concepts you learn in economics, well, finance 101, is this idea of a moral hazard. And that's when you take risks, because you could shift the risks. You can get all the rewards, but you shift all the risks on somebody else. That's bad news. And that's what happens with these weird social contract ideas. Like, I didn't say it was okay to go and spend $1 billion and waste all this money, yet I have to pay for it. and my kids now will have to pay in the form of the national debt.
And that I think is one of the biggest problems with, you know, the consent of the governed argument, because, you know, people say, well, you've given implicit consent because you chose to live here. You could move if you want, but because
You know what I always hear is move to Somalia. I'm like, are you? Because I'm a libertarian.
But it's a flawed argument. That's like saying that a girl who wears a short skirt has given implicit consent to be sexually abused, right?
Yep.
I mean,
right.
That does not happen. No one can give consent to their rights being violated without actually giving consent. Because, of course, if you give consent, then it's not a violation, and you've stupidly or wisely or whatever the circumstance allowed for the violation of your rights in that circumstance. But otherwise, it is a violation. Simply saying that because the state has the power and because we choose, for whatever pragmatic reason or what have you, to live within that state and to thus be subject to its, you know, tyrannical dictates, that does not justify the violation of rights. It may kind of recognize that it's going to happen, and because of your kind of pros and con assessment of where to live and under what restrictions you choose to live there, that does not in any way implicitly consent to that form of being governed or to that violation of your rights.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I find interesting, you know, people like markets, this idea where you can not only say what your preference is, but you can say how much of it is your preference,
mm-hmm.
right? I can not only say, yeah, I want that apple, and instead of just voting for an apple or not voting for an apple, I can vote for it and give a certain number of votes or dollars or whatever.
Well, and it's important, I think, to contrast what we're talking about when we're talking about the state. We're not using the term state in terms of, like, the state of Utah or Florida or whatever.
Yeah, any government.
Well, and I don't think it's even any government, because you have government in church or PTA or, you know, like there is government.
Sure, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, like an actual guns and jails government.
Well, right. So a state is merely just a governmental entity, we can call it that, that claims the monopoly of coercion upon a certain geographical territory. So, for example, the state of Utah is a proverbial state, or, to use that term, is a state, in the sense that it's saying within these borders that we've claimed as our own, we have the ability to tax you and regulate you and have the monopoly of force against you. So I can't hire anyone else to defend my rights, you know, collectively other than the state of Utah. They won't allow some other army or military presence or anything like that, or police power. They claim monopolies on these things. They claim that since I choose to exchange property with someone and live in, you know, Utah County, that therefore I am subject to their jurisdiction and they have power over me. That is the difference between a state and just any type of government and any other organization, you know, Rotary Club, for example, or, you know, any company. You have the board of directors and you have the executive officers and that. But that is all voluntary, right? You've said, well, I choose to affiliate with this company because of the benefits they provide or because of the, you know, whatever circumstances I prefer. And then people say, well, how does a libertarian reconcile taxes, right? You have to pay taxes, but when you change it from the state to the government, if it were a moral government that you voluntarily affiliate, that you actually give your consent to, that you actually sign a contract and it's explicit, you understand, there would be no taxes. It would just be like a membership fee, right? Like in my church, you know, we have tithing, for example, and there's church government. And it's not taxes. We're not taxed. We're not thrown in
right.
jail.
Right. And for example, in your church, if somebody doesn't, if they fall in hard times, then they don't have to pay the tithing.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Tithing is a commandment. You know, it's a requirement regardless. But of course, you have a lot less, and there are ways to help, and you can get financial assistance and all that. But then again,
sure.
You introduce that and you say, as a libertarian, I don't object to people getting assistance who need it, because through the church, it's voluntary. It's people who have voluntarily contributed their money to benefit the poor and help those in need. I contribute that to myself. I have no problem with it. It's voluntary. It's private. It's moral. And the libertarian, I think, who at least advocates getting rid of the state and changing this false form of government and these horrible arguments that we were discussing, the consent of the governed, the social contract, it's not about getting rid of the state and trying to be an anarchist or anything like that. It's the furthest thing from what people think that is. It's merely about enabling a government or just creating a government that is based on moral powers, that is legitimate, where people are actually giving their consent so that there's no violation of rights, but that those who choose to be governed by this government who offers to protect them or whatever else that government may decide to offer as its services, it wouldn't be a violation of your rights, because you've agreed to it. I mean, we talk about, oh, the welfare state, the nanny state, or whatever, but if the government was voluntary, if you chose to affiliate with the state of Utah, you would be doing so voluntarily. You couldn't really object because you agreed to do this, or, you know, subject to this, that, and the other, because that was the terms of the actual contract you signed. It would be far different than what we have today. Today, it's just a rampant violation of rights left and right.
Well, and you touched on it, like membership fee or like user fees. Mm-hmm. And today, what drives me nuts, you know this because you're a computer programmer by trade, we could have an app for governmental user fees, and then they could scan your little Q code or whatever that thing is when the cops show up at your house and your Q code's not paid up. Then it doesn't work out for you. Or, you know what I mean? Or you have to call the charitable version of the police, and they might take a longer time. Or, you know what I mean? I mean, this is a different age that we live in where these problems of externalities can be solved by technology.
And then I think that would be a great first step, right? It's treating what government currently does as a service rather than a benefit.
And then what does that do? That makes it more efficient, makes a better system.
And it makes you more responsible, right?
Yes.
I mean, it puts the burden more on individuals. I think that would do a great job towards increasing personal responsibility and thus individual liberty to help people understand that, you know, they're not going to be protected automatically, bar none, within 30 seconds of calling the police because such and such happened. It you know, would affirm to people the need of maybe protecting themselves and getting training and the tools and necessary. I think we've become so reliant upon this government that claims the power to tax us to help ourselves. We need to separate from that, and the way to do it is to oppose the state.
Love it, man. All right, Connor, thanks for such a great segment. We'll be